Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
Joining us for a look at business and finance this week is the ABC's business editor, Ian Verinder. Ian, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Evening, Phil. Good to be here.
Well, the share market in turmoil this week as the fallout from the collapse of these banks in America washes through. The Silicon Valley Bank, which I read is the 16th biggest bank in the United States, has collapsed. The US government stepped in to say, look, you know, essentially we'll kind of guarantee deposits here. I think that's what they're saying anyway. But it hasn't stopped the financial markets everywhere from getting a distinct case of the wobbles. What is the Silicon Valley Bank? Why is it important and what's going to happen?
Well, Silicon Valley Bank it's been around for quite a while. It's not a little upstart. It's been around for decades now, and it really has serviced the needs and financing needs in particular of Silicon Valley and all the startups, all the technology stocks. They've, you know, helped raise finance for them, give them loans for that specific part of the finance world, of the business world.
Well, and, you mean they lend money to Elon Musk?
They've lent money to a lot of different people, but they've organized finance and they've helped in floats and all kinds of things of these companies. And so as a result, they've started, I guess, a relationship with that industry. And so a lot of those companies have actually put money on deposit in the bank. And a lot of tech investors as well, who, you know, just ordinary investors, have used the bank as well. And look, it's not... Look, I'll go through some of the differences in a little while, but it hasn't been a badly run bank from what I can tell. And as opposed to the global financial crisis, when banks collapsed because underpinning all of the explosion in debt that had taken place was a rot where, you know, they were essentially lending money for dodgy mortgages, right? So for houses that really weren't worth anything. And in a previous other busts, and in fact, just the one last year where we saw all these cryptocurrency firms implode. Well, that was just really, you know, money being sloshed around on you know, for no reason at all. It was not even a real thing. It was a fantasy. This is a bank that actually has been well run. And interestingly, what has brought it undone is that it's been ultra conservative in the way that it's had its assets, or the assets it's chosen to invest in, to back up its as collateral, to back up its deposits. It's invested heavily in US government bonds.
Right.
Really heavily in US government bonds. They've made a bit of a mistake in not hedging some of those bonds, but they've bought a lot of these US government bonds, which are considered to be the risk-free rate of return. That's what a US government bond is.
I thought that was the whole reason to buy them, yes.
Yeah, it was there. That's considered to be ultra cautious, ultra safe. But of course, what's happened in the past year is that with central banks raising interest rates to the extent that they have, and the US Federal Reserve in particular, the bond market has endured its worst year in over 300 years. We've seen the price of bonds absolutely crash. Now, there's an inverse relationship between the price of bonds and the interest rate or the yield on the bonds. And if you picture it as, let's say a bond is worth 100 in total, and if, you know, the price drops to 99, then you've got a 1% yield. If the price drops to 90, you've got a 10% yield. That's the kind of way it works. Right. Now, we've had interest rates at, you know, zero, essentially, for a very long period of time. Inflation has broken out. The US Federal Reserve has gone crazy with rate rise after rate rise after rate rise. And there's an old saying with central banks that they'll raise interest rates to fix a problem like inflation until something breaks. And something now appears to have broken. And the fact that it's actually US government bonds that have brought this institution undone is really quite remarkable. And there's a little bit of an accounting trick that is actually to blame here, because if you buy a US government bond from the government, And let's say it's a 5-year bond, or let's say it's a 10-year bond, right? And you say, okay, I'm going to buy that bond and I'm going to stick it in my vault here, and I'm going to collect the interest rate that accrues to it each year. And at the end of its life, after 10 years, I'm going to hand that back to the government and get my cash back. Now, that's what's known as called hold to maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an accounting term that means that you can, as a bank, you can have that US government bond, and you can put it in your vault and you can declare it as hold to maturity. You don't have to alter the market value of that bond in your accounts because you're saying you're holding it to maturity. And this is what Silicon Valley Bank did. It had quite a large proportion of these bonds, which in an accounting sense, it had hold to maturity. In the hold to maturity account, that means we don't have to revalue it. But of course, what happened last year when the US Federal Reserve started raising interest rates was that the price of bonds collapsed. And as a result, the bonds that they were holding in their vaults were not worth on the market what they were valuing them in their books. And as tech stocks also started to really unravel last year, a lot of investors decided that they were going to take their money out of the Silicon Valley Bank to do other things with it. And it wasn't a run on the bank, but it needed to start cashing in those bonds that it said they were holding to maturity at the market rate, not at the rate that they'd paid for them. And so they started taking losses on those bonds. What's happened in recent weeks is one of the major ratings agencies, as they always do, they go through and rate banks.
Mm-hmm.
They've looked at the books of Silicon Valley Bank, didn't like what they saw, and issued a warning that they were going to downgrade the credit status of the bank. That then accelerated the run on the bank from depositors. And as a result, the bank then had to sell more of these bonds at market rates rather than the rate that they had them in their accounts at.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where the problem has started. It's just snowballed.
Why would the bank have got itself in a situation like this? I mean, as you describe it, it does sound like an obvious risk which ought to be avoided.
Well, it wouldn't have been a problem if we didn't have the absolute carnage on bond markets that took place last year. Right. You know, it would have just sailed on quite remarkably. And look, it's not the only bank in America that is.
I was going to say, they can't be the only one doing this.
No, I guess their problem is that they're not a big bank. They're relatively large, but they're not a huge bank. Bank of America, for instance, has quite a large portfolio of US government bonds in its hold to maturity account, mm-hmm. as does Wells Fargo, as does State Street. They just don't have the same kind of proportion of these bonds in this account, in this type of account on their books. So they're not as exposed, but you know, everybody has some kind of exposure. And you know, what took place over the weekend was that the US Treasury and the US Federal Reserve said, look, we've got to really nip this in the bud. Like Australia, deposits are only guaranteed to around about $250,000. Now, there's a lot of companies, tech companies in particular, that have got millions and millions of dollars, and we're talking Australian tech companies as well here, invested or, you know, deposited with Silicon Valley Bank. The US authorities decided we will guarantee all deposits.
All of them.
And all of them. So that was an attempt to try and instill some confidence into the system to stop the run on, because the run started to emanate out into regional banks as well. And the share price of a lot of US regional banks have tanked in the last 24 hours. So, you know, there's some real problems starting to emerge within the US banking system as a result of this.
So the US government said we'll guarantee all deposits in Silicon Valley Bank, but they can't do that if it widens, you would think.
They may have to. I mean, look, there's an insurance scheme that's actually been set up that all the banks contribute to, and the US government has said that US taxpayers will not be on the hook for any of this expense. That insurance scheme was tightened quite dramatically after the global financial crisis, when essentially taxpayers had to bail out, very, very wealthy bankers, and of course, who all did, you know, spectacularly well financially out of it, while the rest of the economy, you know, endured, you know, months and years of pain. So that insurance scheme has been tightened rather dramatically, and the US government is saying taxpayers will not be on the hook for this. It's going to be the banking industry itself. But it does show the strains that are starting to appear in the system. And as a result of this, I mean, this week, yesterday particularly, we saw a lot of movement on bond markets, a complete reversal. So what's happened in the last 48 hours is that we've seen bond markets reverse their position to say that interest rates must continue rising. They've now backtracked and essentially saying that the US Federal Reserve has to put a halt or at least a pause on its rate hiking program and possibly even start cutting interest rates. So, you know, whenever you undertake radical action, as we've done in the last few years, firstly as a result of the financial crisis, then the pandemic, and now we've gone the other way with jacking up interest rates at a phenomenal speed, unlike anything that's ever happened before. Whenever you start to undertake really radical action like this, there's always something that gives. Mm. And it's always something that's unexpected. And here we have it now.
In some circles, it's being noted that there's a connection between Lehman Brothers and the collapse of that bank and the disaster that was in the global financial crisis, because the bloke who was the chief financial officer at Lehman Brothers, one Joseph Gentile, is also now the chief administrative officer at Silicon Valley Bank.
That's true.
Same guy, different bank.
Yeah. I don't know that we can, put the finger right on him and say it's all your fault, because, you know, if there's anything that's been done wrong within the bank's finances, well, there's two things. One is they didn't undertake a program of what's known as hedging, which is a bit, you know, you take an insurance product out to make sure that, you know, you don't get caught out in the event of a huge market turnaround. So they didn't do that. And they've also, quite legally though, they've also had all of these bonds in their accounts at the value they paid for them rather than what the market value was. But that is that's a bog standard practice that every American bank has, you know.
Does it have any implications for the Australian tech sector? Presumably there would have been tech entrepreneurs here with money in the bank, would there?
There was indeed. And on Monday morning, there was a lot of quite worried tech entrepreneurs in Australia who had millions of dollars in Silicon Valley Bank. And of course, they were incredibly relieved to discover that the US government said they will be getting all of their money back. Mm. And they have retrieved and repatriated all of their cash this week. So that was good news. It still hasn't stemmed the concerns, though, because, you know, we've seen
a couple of other banks have gone under too, haven't they? Little ones, but
Yeah, that's right. There's one called Signature Bank in New York, which has also collapsed. And there's been Monday night, particularly, there was a real run on bank stocks in America, and particularly the smaller banks, the regional banks. Bigger banks have more resources and can weather the storm much better than these smaller regional banks can. Mm. But you know, one thing we all kind of forget about banking is that banking is the riskiest undertaking that you can possibly be part of within the world of stocks and finance. You know, they have relatively small amounts of capital and equity, and they extend vast multiples of that out in loans. And it all works perfectly well when the oil is running through the system and the wheels are all turning and everything's nicely lubricated. But as soon as you get some kind of a hiccup and everybody wants all their money back at the same time, there's not enough money to go around to do that. Hmm. Because banks actually create cash. That's how they operate. And so they can't just readily retrieve it. And that's why there's so much regulation around banking. It's why governments are prepared to step in and back banks when they won't really back many other industries at all.
Do we think, just finally, do we think there is going to be a wider contagion here, or has the US government's action, do you think, stopped this?
It's really difficult to say. Yeah. It's entirely possible that this could get a lot worse before it gets better.
I think what you'll find is that the Federal Reserve and the Reserve Bank of Australia and the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan, bank stocks have been really hard hit this week as a result of all this globally. So I think you'll find that all of them are going to take stock of what they've been doing and think, well, okay, inflation is a problem here, but do we really want a financial crisis on the top of it? Probably not.
Exactly. All right, Ian, good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.